This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And yes, indeed, this is The Deep Dive, and this is Brooke Spector, as usual, on Friday morning. And I'm delighted to have as a guest somebody I talked to a couple of years ago when she was just, her name was suddenly becoming very well known all of a sudden, Kenealoi Molopanye. And if I mispronounce it one more time, I'm going to really be embarrassed but she is a paleoarchaeologist or a paleoanthropologist or a paleontologist, otherwise known as somebody who studies bones, old bones, to understand things. And I remember talking to you, oh gosh, this is some years back. You had just come out of some adventures in scuba diving, recovering the important materials that were on a slave trading ship that had been wrecked off the coast of South Africa. And that, I think, was the first time most people had even heard your name, because that was back then. And if I remember correctly, your original, I think it was your dissertation, you were looking at a comparative analysis of the bones of people who had been buried in paupers' graves to see if you could identify distinctive measures of difference between better off versus much poorer people, to see if there were serious anatomical differences that could be measured and explained and therefore used in a predictive kind of way. Is my memory accurate on all of this?
No, it is perfectly accurate. I will say that I've had quite a number of adventures in archaeology and paleoanthropology. I studied archaeology in undergraduate studies at the University of Pretoria. And it was around my second year where I was excited about human bones within archaeological contexts. So that's what I started specializing in, and then somehow landed in underwater archaeology, where again I was working on a slave ship that had sunk on the Cape Coast, and essentially my role in that project was looking for bodies, because the ship did go down with a couple of slaves on it. So my role was to look for the bodies and to analyze them. Unfortunately, we didn't find any bodies and underwater, but we did find the shipwreck, so that was great. And then moving on from underwater archaeology, I went into biological anthropology, where again I was trying to understand markers on the skeleton to determine the life experiences of individuals within the city of Joburg. Did apartheid and the violence and unequalness show on the bodies of the people that I was looking at? That was an interesting exercise, because I didn't find any real differences, right? So what that told me is that, okay, the atrocities that were occurring sort of affected the soft tissue and psychological traumas more than they did the bones. So that was interesting. And then halfway through my PhD, I was sidetracked in a good way. And I think this is where my name really got known in the media. This was in 2021, where I became a National Geographic Explorer for my involvement in paleoanthropology, working at the site of Rising Star and Home the Lady material. And it's been a crazy ride since then.
When we say the cradle of humankind and all of that, these are caves or structures that natural forces have created, right? I mean, water trickling through over eons of time, and then tectonic or other kinds of earth movements have made spaces. And so there was this series of caves out there. The, what do we call those? Which ones are those called? The Rising Star collection.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a, how to put it, it became clear that there wasn't just a cave. There were a whole series of caves, and they led through this torturously narrow, passageway mm-hmm. into yet another space. And for people to explore that, there had to be a recruitment of really bright, strong, thin, well-prepared, well-trained, oh, painfully thin people to fit through that passageway, but who knew their way around caves and who knew their way, more importantly, around archaeological, paleontological explorations. And mm-hmm. you put your hand up and they said, yep, we want you, along with a dozen or so others. And that's kind of how it started.
Yes, that is how it started. I mean, I wasn't at all as prepared for the adventure, nor completely qualified for it. Yes, I had the archaeological background, and I was doing my PhD, so academically I was sound. Physically, I mean, I was thin. I'm still kind of thin. But I had to be strong. I had to get strong in order to traverse the Rising Star cave system, because it's really, really tough. And this was the first time I'd be working in a cave system. But I did have my scuba diving background. So what that meant is that I could work, or I had the ability to work in extreme environments and still keep my cool, because I was still alive at that point. It's been insane. It's also quite exciting to see new members of the team, other students come through, and training them to go through the Rising Star cave system in the same way that I was trained by Marina Elliott and Becca Pachotto. And it's exciting to see these young, mostly women, go through these spaces and just experience what I experienced years ago.
Why is it mostly women?
I think we just have the right body size for it. And we tend to deal with situations better than men, I think. I remember when Lee Berger went down for the first time last year.
He's bigger than you. I mean, he's a healthy sized guy.
Yeah, he's a big guy, even though, you know, I say big, not in a bad way. But you know, he is bulky. But he lost a lot of weight, and he managed to get down quite easily. It was the way up again. That was a struggle. And I completely understand that. He always says he nearly died. I'm like, I believe you, dude. And now you believe me that it's difficult, right? And he's like, yeah, I'm so sorry for sending you down. I'm so sorry. But it's great.
Now, the question that I think people want to, you know, they realize, hey, this is exciting. You know, there are caves and there are ancient remnants of an earlier type of hominin creature. They're not humans and presumably aren't direct ancestors to humans as we know them. So why does it matter? Why does it matter at all that they lived in these caves 300,000, 400,000 years ago? That's ancient history.
Yeah, it is ancient history. But I think as a species, Homo sapiens, we are kind of nosy and curious, about who we are and where we come from, and obviously trying to predict where we're going. So first of all, Homo naledi, we haven't found evidence of this creature living in the caves. I don't think any hominins that we have recovered, from the cradle of humankind have lived in the caves. They often landed up in these cave systems either as a death trap, so they'd fall in, get injured, not be able to get out, and that's where they would die, or they're pulled in as prey from predators. That's been the understanding of how we find these fossils in these cave systems. Homo naledi is doing something different. It seems from the evidence that we've collected, they're going into this cave system, this particular cave system, because we haven't
found them. Sure. I want you to hang on to that. Don't, because we got to take an ad break.
But cool.
I this is the point. I want the listeners to go, what is she going to tell us? We're speaking to Kenelioe Molopiani. Yes. I'm working at this one. Really, I am, folks. And she is an underground astronaut and explorer in the rising star cave system and all this other kind of amazing stuff, and a National Geographic Society emerging explorer and a super scientist. She's even got a graphic novel now.
Yep.
About her. It's interesting. I like it. We're going to take a brief ad break. This is The Deep Dive. It's Brooke Spector, your host, and we'll be back in just a minute.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And this is The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and we're speaking with one of my favorite people, somebody with this bountiful enthusiasm and energy, doing things that would frighten me half to death. And this is Kenelioe Molopiani, an underground explorer, underground astronaut. I tend to think of her as an Argonaut more than an astronaut, actually. Integral in the explorations at the Rising Star cave system out at the cradle of humankind. And I stopped her just as she was going to explain why finding what the Homo naledi species folks had done there was so interesting. Tell me, why is it interesting?
Oh, it is so, and it's the best mystery that we've uncovered so far in paleoanthropology, because Homo naledi and the way that it's using the cave system, which is something we're still investigating, but they're using it in a very different way. They're going into these cave systems intentionally. Last year we discovered evidence of fire. So I was a lead excavator for the Dragon's Back chamber within the Rising Star system, and we found evidence
of fire look like. It's been extinguished for 300,000 years.
Well, it's a great story. It's a very beautiful story where I'm leading a team underground. We're excavating, and we start seeing ash and charcoal. And this is not normal for a paleoanthropology site. Archaeological side, yes, okay, it's normal. But in paleoanthropology, it's not a common occurrence. So we sort of started uncovering an accumulation of charcoal, and then the ground seems burnt, and the rocks seem burnt, and they're in this configuration. And it's like, oh, okay, this is a fire pit. It's a small fire pit that we're uncovering. And at the same time, Lee Berger is in the Dinaledi chamber, which is a chamber adjacent to Dragon's Back, which is where I was working. And he looked up at the ceiling, and he noted soot on the walls. And so that, to him, was like, okay, they're using fire in this chamber. And then he came out, and I was like, hey, we have this here. And he's like, oh, more fire. So Homo naledis, we think, had mastered the art of fire. Whether they were making it or they brought it in is a question we still need to answer. But they had fire, and they're using fire to navigate their way through a cave system into a isolated chamber where they are burying their dead. They're intentionally making holes in the ground, putting bodies in it, and covering them, which is something that was thought to be unique to Homo sapiens, so us modern humans. But it appears that perhaps it's an ancient tradition that we might have learned from ancient hominins like Homo naledi.
If this were video right now, there would be a bubble that would say, wow.
Yeah, let's just insert it. Wow.
Yeah, because I mean, we burial rites tend to be heretofore. I think everybody just assumed somehow that burial rites belong to the realm of Homo sapiens, us.
Right. Yeah.
Because burial rites imply an understanding of the present and the future and the passage from one reality to another of some type. Mm-hmm. And that implies a kind of religiousness in a way, a sense of a belief system at the minimum. And all of this is taking place through creatures who have the brain sizes of grapefruit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's incredible, right? That one thing or two things that we thought were unique to Homo sapiens, that is burials or funerary rites, as well as meaning making in terms of symbols. So another thing that we uncovered last year during our Rise and Star expedition is we saw markings on the walls. And these are not natural markings. These were intentionally made grooves and etches in the walls. So there is symbol making or art, as the media puts it out, that we attribute at this moment to Homo naledi simply because we haven't found evidence of any other species within the cave system.
I mean, I know that humans like to leave a mark on things. Mm-hmm. A personal anecdote. I was exploring is too big a word. I was wandering through a natural reserve in the island of Java, which was kind of rocky and not quite mountainous. And we came on a boulder, and on the side of it was painted, "Kojak was here."
Right. Now,
Jack clearly hadn't been there, but somebody took the trouble to bring a bucket of white paint and a brush to mm-hmm. write "Kojak was here" on the side of this rock, on the theory that they were telling us something about themselves. And so your Homo naledians, scratched something on the wall to tell themselves and others and all who follow that they too had been there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so that speaks to understanding about time.
It does, but also it speaks to our understanding of brain size and capabilities. For a very long time, it was thought that Homo sapiens, we have big brains, therefore we can do complex things. Homo naledi, small brain, size of a chimpanzee, is also doing complicated things. So what that's saying is that it's not the brain size, it's the configuration of the neurons within the brain, that is what is allowing for complex behaviors. And I think what has been interesting in how the public has, and as well as academia, have been responding to our papers that we released on the burials and the markings on the walls, is that it seems so far out there because we only have Homo sapiens as a reference, right? We are the only hominins on the planet. We don't have Neanderthals. We don't have Homo habilis or Australopithecus africanus or Homo naledis to talk to, like, directly. We just have their fossil remains. And so we're trying to understand behavior from the little evidence that we have. So it's going to be a long journey of investigation to try to understand these behaviors and how they relate to us, how we are related to them, and possibly, hopefully, completely understand who we are as Homo sapiens on planet Earth.
Doesn't this also just speak to the possibility that fire making or fire conserving or tool making and tool use and burial rites of, I mean, I remember that there was a flurry of information and argument years ago when it was discovered what were presumed to be the remnants of flowers deposited with the Neanderthal grave site. And presumably Neanderthals have the brain size that's about almost like humans. And it didn't seem totally inconceivable that they did this. So is it possible that this is really a long behavior that goes way back, the ritualized behavior, the thinking to the future, the marking of territory, and the use of tools and fire, much deeper in our collective history than we used to think? And yeah, so, how far back?
Right, that the evidence is pointing to the fact that these behaviors that we think are unique to modern Homo sapiens is not new and it's not unique to us. It might be something that we learned along the way to becoming who we are. How far back it stretches, I don't know. And I don't think we have the answers to that right now. So what our research for Homo naledi has done is that it's indicating that burials, the complex activity, is at least 200 to 300,000 years old. And we thought that, you know, this kind of activity was occurring 190,000 years ago. So now we've pushed that back. And I guess it's a matter of time before someone else comes along and they're like, hey, we also found evidence of burial that is 400,000 years or 500,000 years ago. But that door is always open. I think we sort of need to hold back on the oldest. It is just the oldest for now. And something else will come about. Dating techniques will become more advanced and we might get more accurate timelines along the way.
And what does that, this business of a burial and it's the implications for thinking about, I keep using the word religion, and I'm not sure that that's the right word for it in this case, but a sense of time and transience and an afterlife of some kind in some way thinking about, should this be disturbing to the way we think about religion in our current circumstances?
I think that is problematic. I'm thinking now on how we study ancient relics and burial sites or archaeological sites. We're imposing our own understanding to a time where perhaps it's not the same thing, right? Mm-hmm. Where symbols don't mean the same thing, where activities don't necessarily mean the same thing that they do today. So that is my major thing with interpreting these occurrences, this evidence. We can only refer to ourselves to try to understand what's going on. And there is a possibility that we might be missing the mark because we're imposing ourselves on something that is not us. But it's the only way that we understand or we can understand what's happening. But again, you need to be open-minded in the sciences and take in as much as you can. Even look at the animal kingdom and how animals deal with situations. 'Cause again, we could have learned it from them. You know, from a lineage that isn't Homer or human, to some extent. I really look forward to trying to answer these questions in the future.
I mean, people have noticed that elephants go back to the site of a member of their cohort or the, what do we call them, tribe, herd, something, that passed away, and then they almost literally shuffle the bones if they're there. I've seen that. In my own case, I know one of our cats clearly pined away, even though it was, I don't think that cat liked the other one very much. When the, when the first one died, the second one sort of went into a terminal decline, very quickly. And I like what you're saying to me, that Homo naledi or even their forebears might well have learned it from yet other species, that this is what one does. Yeah. And that all of our behaviors now derive from observations of the natural universe beyond humans, and how you deal with members of your group, your tribe, your cohort, your herd, your clan.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, that's going to be a very difficult question to try to answer, right? Because then what species do you now look at to try to find these behaviors? Because for behavior, you need a body and an environment that tells a story. And often those two are not found together. And that's a great thing about Homo naledi, is that these two are found together in an isolated space. So you can study behavior for a particular species.
Now, the markings that you mentioned on the cave wall that you folks discovered almost by accident. I mean, just sort of glancing around the room with a flashlight, basically. Oh, look at that. You know, they've written Kojak was here in ancient Homo naledian, on the wall. What kinds of interpretations can be made of those? I remember reading that, there were, relics, a piece of bone that had what appeared to be geometric markings on it. And that was dated at, 70,000 years ago. And clearly that was Homo sapien lineage material. But this is a whole different thing. And somebody took the time with holding up a burning piece of wood, presumably, to scratch markings on the side of a cave wall that nobody else is ever going to see.
Right. Yeah. These markings are found in a very isolated space, a very special space. So it seems, because we haven't noticed them anywhere else in the cave system. But also, having said that, we weren't looking for markings on the wall. So when Lee noticed the markings, it was in a space that I had been to many, many times. Other researchers had been in many, many times. But we went in with a particular mission in mind, which was to get to the chamber and to excavate the bones. We weren't looking at the walls or the roof. So we missed it. I mean,
that's a preconception on your part, interpreters and explorers.
Exactly. I was walking past these things millions of times and never noticed. we're going to go back to Rising Star, and we're going to try re-explore the spaces that we had already been in, because there must be loads that we missed. We missed the evidence of fire the first time around. We caught it the second time around. So what other things have we missed? So that's going to be the mission going forth, is to re-explore the cave system and see what we might have missed. Who knows, maybe we might find another burial chamber. We might find more fire or more symbols carved in the walls.
You know, that marking probably says in ancient Homo naledian, abandon hope, all ye who enter here.
We hope not.
And there'll be strange noises. This is a great science fiction movie I'm beginning to write on your behalf.
Amen. As long as I get credit.
Absolutely. Archaeological consultant, you are, you know, you'll go ahead of the credits for the director. We have to take another break. We're speaking with Kinaloy Molopiani, getting it better and better each time I try
better,
this.
Better. Well done.
She is an underground astronaut associated with the university that did Boxer's Run and, of course, with the Cradle of Humankind and the Rising Star Cave and finding really spooky, mysterious stuff down there in the burial chamber of the Rising Star Cave. And we'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
And we are back with The Deep Dive, and I'm Brooke Spector, and my guest today is Kinaloy Molopiani, underground astronaut, although I keep calling her an Argonaut, which is, I think, more fun. And she's associated with all those wonderful discoveries, fascinating things at the Cradle of Humankind, the burial chamber, the strange markings on the wall of the burial chamber, the fire that burned in the special cave. Are we just at the beginning of trying to understand all this? I mean, the way you describe it, it's like you've opened the book and now you're still at the introduction. We haven't even gotten to the preface.
Yeah, that is exactly correct. We're just at the very beginning. So when we made all these announcements last month, I think, about the burials, about the markings, meme making, just cognition of Homna Lady, we just announced that, listen, this is what we found. We don't know what it means, so we need you, the academic environment, and even the public to help us understand what we're finding. We're literally just on page one. It's by no means the end of the book, which I think a lot of people assume that we are on the last page where we completely understand Homna Lady and how they relate to us. But the reality is we're on page one, and we need to fill out the rest of the book.
And that tells me that this is going to be a long book that people are going to be working at writing, let alone reading, for years and years to come, as more and more scientific and technological capabilities are brought to bear on trying to understand and interpret what you see. I mean, to find a fire pit that's several hundred thousand years old, that's already past the time of radiocarbon dating, if I remember correctly. And so actually nailing down the precise dates for it already is problematic, although there are other methods and tools to do this work. The normal things that one uses now become a little more complex.
Yes. And that's the beauty of our research team, is we're always open to collaborations. There's someone out there that has methods in mind that they have developed or are wanting to develop that could help us in answering the questions that we have. So we're always open for collaboration. And it's a pretty neat team to be a part of. Very exciting stuff, very intelligent people that you learn from. And our doors are always open.
Now, let me take you back into that cave, into that Stygian darkness that's illuminated by a couple of torches and some flashlights giving eerie shadows on the wall. And you're poking your hand around on the ground, hoping that you don't disturb something that has to be preserved in precisely its matrix of stuff. And you trip over something. And how do you now move forward in understanding what you just accidentally uncovered?
How we move forward is we try to work from the known to the unknown, right? So we've made this discovery, and our focus now is on what we discovered. So we're planning another expedition season in July, August, to go back to Rising Star, go back to the Dragon's Back Chamber and continue excavating there and perhaps expanding to other regions of the cave system. I mean, I'm primarily responsible for Dragon's Back, so that's the fire project. So I'm going to be going down looking for more evidence of fire and trying to understand how it's placed within the cave system, in particular locations with associated material. So in Dragon's Back, we also have small animal bones, some of which are burnt, others are cracked open. So it seems that whoever was using that space, and because we only know that Home Naledi used the Rising Star cave system, so we think it's Home Naledi using that space, they might have been cooking something in Dragon's Back, which is very close to the Dina Lady chamber. So what does that mean? Does it mean that they're sitting in Dragon's Back, eating, getting their energy reserves to go into the burial chamber to perform this ritual of burials? I don't know, but that's what the evidence seems to say right now. It'll be interesting to go back this season to see if that is actually what's happening, or maybe it's more complex. Maybe there are other fires elsewhere, which could mean that, okay, they're not cooking there necessarily, they're not living there, but maybe they're just lighting the way to get to the burial chambers, the various burial chambers. And I guess what would be interesting as well is to look at other cave systems in the cradle. I mean, there are over 200 caves in the cradle, to see if there's also evidence of Home Naledi there or Home Naledi type behavior in these cave systems. That would be interesting to see.
Well, in the contemporary world, the world you and I and everybody else lives in the among the Toraja people in central Sulawesi, which is part of Indonesia, people place the remains of their relatives who have died in caves above ground, and every couple of years they take them down, mm-hmm. and they have a ritual feast with the remains of their dead relatives, and then they wrap them back up and put them back where they came from.
Yeah, I mean, could this be happening at Rising Star? We don't know.
Well, I mean, that when you started to describe it, I was visualizing what I know about the Toraja, who do this as a matter of course and have been doing it for a long time. Let's put it that way. And for them, this is the way in which they stay in touch with their lineage and their ancestors, and at the same time convey a sense of things to come to the children.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, passing down that tradition, right? Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. There's another question I know that's come up about some of the research that's been done recently, and that's a question of the actual age of some of the remains and discoveries. And there have been some disputes among the academic community that maybe the dating system isn't accurate or is muddled in some way. Help me out on that a little bit too, if you could.
I mean, look, I think dating in itself is a muddled business, because you don't get precise dates, you get approximations. It is approximately this old. You have a minimum and a maximum age. I think we have done the best that we can do with the material that is present at Rising Star for the techniques that are available. To try to redate or apply new methods, okay, we're possibly open to that. But what if they give us the same dates? Or if the dating difference isn't that great? You know, it's to some extent, I don't think not that the dates don't matter. I'm interested in the behavior, actually. That's what gets me going, to see how this creature is behaving with its environment and with one another. So those are the questions that I'm interested in, not so much the dates, whether Homna Lady is earlier, like younger than what we think it is. That'll be great, because it'll be more like us modern Homo sapiens. If it's older, okay, that's still fine. But it's still doing complex things that have carried over to our time. And so what does that mean? Is there a missing hominin in the middle that we still need to find that is possibly doing the same things? Yeah, it's complex, I'll say that. Dating, even in archaeological terms, is complex business.
I mean, in a way, if Homo naledi were, that the dates ascribed to it were younger than the current one, that would be more interesting still, because that might speak to two separate species
living at the same time.
At the same time, and presumably in same turf.
Yeah.
Which would be extraordinary.
It would be. And then you just have to ask yourself, okay, well then, if we were on the same landscape at the same time, what happened to Homo naledi? Why are they not around anymore? How did Homo sapiens behave towards them? Are we as destructive as we say we are? Being the only hominins that are around, did we just go around completely conquering all the land and other competition?
Well, that also would be another comparative with the way Homo Neanderthal and Homo sapiens interacted in Southern Europe. One survived, the other one didn't, and it wasn't entirely due to climate.
Right, exactly.
And I'm not going to specify exactly what tools were used, but clearly one group survived and the other one did not.
And there is
some evidence too in the island of Flores in Indonesia that Homo Flores, how do we pronounce that? Homo Floresiens?
Yep.
Was there coterminously with Homo sapiens as well.
Yep. And they disappeared.
Yeah, they're gone. Although somebody says they saw one way up in a hill somewhere, but those hills have been walked over for a long time by people, so I don't know. What I get the feeling from you is this sort of boundless enthusiasm for this voyage that you and your colleagues and counterparts are on. It's like, well, you've discovered this brand new toy, and every time you play with it, you discover it has even more complexities than you thought.
Yeah, it's great, but also it's frustrating as well, because,
why is it frustrating?
Rising Star is, or Homo naledi, is a species and a site that just keeps on giving. It just gives and gives and gives. The more times we ask questions of it, and it sort of leaves very little room for other sites in the cradle. So I am the principal investigator for Glasvel Cave, which is also in the cradle. And Glasvel was one of the earliest cave sites that were studied. that have been studied in the cradle. It produced one of the first hominin remains since Mrs. Place. And so Lee Berger worked at Glasvel for, 17, 20 years? and then he moved on from the site. And there was this understanding that there's nothing left at Glasvel that is unique. until I came along and my team worked at Glasvale last year, at our first expedition in over 20 years. And we have uncovered some pretty neat fossils, you know, some of which haven't been recovered for many, many years. So there is also that exciting patch to the cradle. So that adds another plate to my table, which is Rising Star and Glasvale. And then there's another site, UW-105, which we worked on in 2020. And that's also a very interesting cave system on the same property as Rising Star, but a very different cave, with what we think are very different hominins. Of course, this is still all under study, but it would be interesting to see how all of these sites relate or don't relate to one another, and for sure use of the landscape and the actors on the landscape and how they play with one another. So yeah, it's this trick of trying to not focus too much on Rising Star, but have Rising Star as a starting point, and then working our way through the cradle.
We're going to take another break, and then we're going to come back for some final words and some thoughts and some predictions and some hopes, maybe a prayer or two on what we'll find. We're speaking with Tindaloy Molopiani, associated with University of the Witwatersrand, and I think now indelibly associated with Cradle of Humankind. Even before she did that, she had all those other interesting adventures, deep sea diving to look for remnants of and remains of slaves on a ship that had crashed off of Cape Town. Is your shopping list longer and your time shorter? Dis-Chem Delivered has you covered. From healthcare essentials to baby food, beauty, and toiletries, whatever you need, Dis-Chem Delivered has you covered. Download the easy-to-use Dis-Chem app and shop for over 7,000 products at in-store prices that will be delivered to you within 60 minutes. Now you can relax while Dis-Chem delivers your essentials to you. It's that simple. Dis-Chem Delivered, from Dis-Chem to you. Dis-Chem Pharmacies, pharmacists who care. We'll be right back after this message.
This is The Deep Dive with Brooke Spector.
This is The Deep Dive. I'm Brooke Spector, and we've been speaking with Dr. Tindaloy Molopiani, and she is one of those underground astronauts. Tell Lee I called you an Argonaut, and see what happens. I like it better. I think it's more interesting. But okay. she's been party to some extraordinary adventures in the cave system. Evidence of fire, evidence of burials, evidence even of markings on the wall saying something. And if you could sum it up, what would you say all of this work tells us? What does it, or what are we supposed to infer from all of these discoveries and thoughts and uncoverings? What does it tell us about us?
Well, so far from all the discoveries that have been made, what is clear is a message that we're not that unique, right? I think Homo sapiens have this arrogance that we are unique, and there's no one else like us, you know. What Homo naledi is doing and the discoveries associated with it is that, no, we're not that unique. We might have learned everything that we know today from our ancient human ancestors. And so now the quest is to understand our ancient human ancestors in order to understand ourselves and our place within this environment that we find ourselves in.
This has been a delight to chat with you. I'm so glad that you were available after a long and sort of arduous international journey that you've been engaged in. We've been speaking, of course, with Dr. Tindaloi Molopiani of the Cradle of Humankind in all its various forms, and at the Vitz University. She's down there right at the, I guess I shouldn't do it. She's down there right at the coalface of the discoveries that are taking place in this field at this time. And it has been a great pleasure to bring you to the audience.
Oh, thank you so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure talking to you, Brooks.
We'll do this again when you discover something else. When you discover the Rosetta Stone under there somewhere, we'll have another conversation.
Of course, naturally.
Okay. You take care and have a good rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
This has been The Deep Dive, and this is Brooks Spector, and we have been speaking with Dr. Tindaloi Molopiani, as we've said, talking about some of the most extraordinary discoveries taking place at the Cradle of Humankind, in what, as I say, is a true golden age, second golden age, perhaps, of discovery for human origins, through all the different means and ways that one can find them. Tune in next week, and we'll have another interesting, informative guest in the news, and we'll talk about another topic that I hope will entertain, inform, and excite my audience.